നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരണേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ സോ യെസ്റ്റർഡേ വി വർ ടോക്കിംഗ് അബൌട്ട് വാസാംസി ജീർണായി യഥാ വിഹായ നവാനി ഗൃഹ്ണാതി നരോവരാണി തഥാ ശരീരാണി വിഹായ ജീർണ അന്യാദി സംയാതി നവാനി ദേഹി Nachiketas went to the lord of death, Yamadharmaraja, and in answer to his questions, Yamadharmaraja spoke to him in three different levels. One was based on the understanding that about the body. Other one was based on the mind, and the third one was based on the spiritual level. That is in the understanding that that is the three different levels he answered. The first answer was that from a bodily platform he answers that the senses, the mind, the intelligence, all the different activities in the body is carried out due to the presence of the soul. And he also mentioned that we have seen yesterday, and he also mentioned that in the platform of the mind or in the mental level, when one goes into dream state or in the sopnam state, who creates that world there? In the dream state, who creates that dream world? And in that dream world, makes everything he creates, and make us to feel as though it's real in that state. And that is the soul. That was Yamadharmaraja's answer. That is just like in the vacant state, when we experience something, we feel as though it's real. Isn't it? So it's a real thing. That's why we give unmatvam, it's called. Unma. Unma means satyatvam. In other words, a kind of reality is given to it. A feeling of reality in there. That feeling of reality, what we are experiencing in the vacant state, through senses, and we accept it as though it's real. Similarly, in the dream state also, Yamadharmaraja says to Nachiketas, that it is through the presence of the soul that even in the dream state, while experiencing it, it appears as though it's real to us. And you go through the whole emotions, like in the vacant state, happiness, distress, and different emotions, that all we experience in the dream state. He explained that also to Nachiketas. Then finally, he spoke to Nachiketas about the absolute nature of the soul, how the soul's transmigration is in effect, it has no effect on the soul. In effect, it has no effect on the soul. That is the what he has spoken to him. So, when he has answered all these questions, the extremely subtle activities of the soul, and explained to him about the platform in which the soul operates, what happens to the jiva, the conditioned soul, and what happens to him after the death. And he says the body will turn into ashes here. The soul has neither birth nor death. Soul has neither birth nor death. For who has got the birth then? Who is taking birth again? That is to the that is for the jiva. Soul has no birth or death. For jiva, which is the conditioned state of the soul, has got the birth and death. Sushma shariram. That is what he said here. Vasamsi jirna yatha vihaya navani. Dehi is referred to here as jiva. Jiva means which has broken away from the soul and who has taken this conditioned state, conditioned form, or which experiences happiness, distress, attachment, aversion, birth and death, sinful activity, pious activity. All these different dualities are only connected with the jiva, not with the atma. Atma has nothing to do with it. Krishna also says there, isn't it? In the Ekadasha Skandam, you will see Krishna says to Uddhava, all these things are happening because of the and jiva existence of jiva. And the jiva existence is related to his false ego. So Krishna says that, and then as much as a dress gets old, we throw it away and we put on a new cloth or new dress. And similarly, when our prarabdham is finished in this body, we accept another body. We accept another body. Yatha karmam, yatha shrutam. Kathopanishad says like that. According to his knowledge and according to his vasana. So these two dharmam. Yamadharmaraja explained all these things. And he made Nachiketas to understand the in answer to his questions. And that same knowledge, what Nachiketas received from Yamadharmaraja, is what Krishna has combined in this verse. Vasamsa jirnai yatha vihaya navani grihnadi naroparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirna anyadi samyadi navani dehi. Then sometimes when you speak to people, some people will say that we do not believe in rebirth. We do not believe in birth. Some people say we believe in rebirth. This is not a matter of whether you believe it or you don't believe it. It has no meaning in either way. Then the rebirth is not such a thing that you have to believe. It is only a relative truth. It's not an absolute truth. So unless people understand this, see, people don't see these different levels, what we are talking about. On an absolute level, rebirth doesn't exist. Because for the soul, in its pure form, there is no such thing called as rebirth. Atma has no rebirth. What happens is, Krishna has set up a law like this. When the jiva or conditioned soul is born, or conditioned soul exists, when it is going through the conditioned state, it is one of those phases where you move from one body to another. It will happen. So whether you believe it or not, it doesn't matter either. If you believe it, it's good for you. It's up to you. But if you don't believe it, it's not going to matter very much. Because ultimately, the Atma has nothing to do with it. So on an absolute platform, punarjanmam or rebirth has no importance. But on a relative platform, it's only on a relative platform this is happening. That means, just like jiva is asat, also is asat, isn't it? Jiva is also a temporary existence as a jiva, conditioned state. So in that state, it has to follow these rules, in other words. It has to leave the body, accept another body, because it has got a subtle body inside. And subtle body will dictate about its next move, to the next body which it has to accept. So it's only as a relative truth, not as an absolute truth. That's why when we speak to people, when they tell you that, oh, I don't believe in this rebirth, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, because on an absolute platform, it doesn't affect them. Because people want proof for everything, isn't it? Otherwise, they won't accept it. But Shastram is telling us, on a relative platform, jiva must move from one body to another. And the reasons why it wants another body and how it happens. This is the thing what Nachiketas was spoken about. That when a child is born, and it's only a relative truth. Even if you don't believe in it, there is no harm in that. If you don't believe in rebirth, fine. It's not going to matter very much. But if you believe in that, nothing is going to happen either, whether you believe it or not. It is only an explanation, this rebirth. It's only an explanation of our vasanas inside. And when a child is born, you must remember, as soon, when a child is born, he is not born completely blank. He is not born blank. And he brings along with him all vasanas, what he had acquired before. That nobody is born in a blank state. And sometimes you can see that sometimes scientists try to conduct experiments on this issue of rebirth. Many times they have tried to do this. Sometimes it comes in the newspaper that a child born in such and such a place knows about his past, where he was in the previous life. He was born in another far away, another place, and the family where he lived with, and he was probably a grandfather or somebody there who left his body and took birth here as a new baby. And this is known as parapsychology. Psychologists have gone up and tried to verify these things. And many times they have found that it is true also, that a child sometimes brings this memory back from the previous life. So they have investigated these things and they have found out that there is some truth in this, that the soul can leave one place from one body and accept another body in another place in his next life. So these things have been experimented by these parapsychologists. And sometimes these people, new soul, the new body which is accepted, the child remembers its previous life in another place, how old he was and what happened. There are many things, the location of the house where they lived before, and many things are in the memory of the child. And it will be true also. So it has came up many times in that way. So the important thing is, this is a truth only on a relative plane. Only on a relative plane. It is a fact. But why? What is the reason one has to accept another body? This is the most important question, isn't it? Why do we have to accept another body? Well, first thing is that we have become a jiva. We have become a jiva due to avidya. Avidya has come to us. And the result of that, we have lost our identity as the soul. That spiritual identity we have lost. That's why we become a jiva. Jiva means we have lost our spiritual identity as atma. And we have become the conditioned state in the form of jiva. So jiva state has happened because of avidya. So that is the first problem. And we also, when you come to the jiva state, it also has a desire to travel. It also has a desire to travel. That this desire to travel is in jiva all the time. So when prarabdham is finished and leaves this body, jiva has a desire to travel to so many different places. Devalokam, Pitralokam, Arthilokam, all sorts of places it wants to travel. Even now, you can see while in this world itself, jiva's nature is not to be stay in one place, isn't it? It keeps moving from place to place. It wants to travel all the time. So this traveling tendency is very much there. Sometimes he goes from one body to another. And with whatever desire inside, it leaves this body. Then accordingly, he has to go and accept that body. That is the way it works. Like we saw in the Bharatamaraj story, isn't it? In the next birth, because of that vasana strongly built up inside, he has to accept the body of a deer in the next life. So, as we discussed yesterday, what happens at the time of death? And the statement in Kathamanishad, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavadam, is exactly the same. Exactly the same. What Krishna says in the Bhagavadam and what Kathamanishad Yamadharmaraja says to Nachiketa is like this. That at the time of death, all the different vasanas or impressions inside what we have created, and it has all been set up properly in an order. The most powerful one will be in the front. Most powerful one will be in the front. At the time of death, all these different vasanas will take some form and come and stand in front of us. Out of that, the most powerful one, which is in the friend, we will start seeing that at the time of death while leaving this body. So when it is in front of us like that, for quite some time, because that vasana has been strongly influencing us from outside, At some point in time, the jiva starts thinking, am I not that body? Am I not that body? And when this starts growing inside, the other side, our identification with the existing temporary material body is slowly weakening. So when this is weakening, the other one is getting strengthened according to the new vasana. It is at that point that after some time he starts thinking, am I not that body? In other words, his identification with this body he loses, and he starts accepting the identification with the other body based on this powerful vasana standing in front of him. So this is, Krishna puts it like this. Krishna says in the Bhagavadam that mrityu atyanda vismriti, that is Krishna's definition of death. Uddhava, this death is not a very big thing. That's how Krishna simplifies it. Basis. It is only another strong forgetfulness of your identity. Till now, you identified with this body, mrityu atyanda vismriti, that once for all, you are forgetting this body, that's all. In other words, you forgot this body and some new identification started with another body. That's all mrityu means. This is Krishna's point. Mrityur atyanda vismriti. In the Bhagavadam, Krishna says this to Uddhava. Mrityu atyanda vismriti. That eternal forgetfulness of this body, existing body, is death. Atyanda vismriti. And as soon as we forget, at the same time, slowly, our forgetfulness with this body gets stronger, and the identity with the new body gets, forgetfulness becomes stronger here, and identity with the new body get very stronger. Accordingly, we move from this body to the next body. That is the point what Krishna was saying in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in Kathoma, this same thing, Vasamsi Jirnai Yathavihaya Navani Krishnadi Narobarani Tatha Sharirani Vihaya Jirna Anyadi Samyadi Navani Dehi. That Dehi, the transmigration of the soul, is in on the principle of this. That on the principle of this. So, for example, that somebody, a grandfather, thinks about the grandchild and he leaves his body, then he has to come back there as a grandchild in that family. It happens often. Sometimes people, in the olden days, particularly when families were big and all the members lived together, when a child is born, sometimes other members in the family will say, oh, he is like the granddad who left, isn't it? It is not he is like that. He is him only. He has come there. That is the fact, that he has come there due to his attachment to that home and the family and everything. He had to come back. He had no choice to go away from here. That because he was not willing to leave the body. He was not willing to leave that place because of all the attachment to all the other family members, his house and all the assets, everything. And many, he doesn't want to leave home in spite of all the problems he has got. And therefore he had come back and got birth again there. Many great devotees have spoken about this. Even they have spoken about their previous life. Lord Buddha has spoken about that. That many times I have lived that like this and all, he says. And that's how he became Bodhisattva. And making of Buddha, there is a book in that you can read about Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha, how he has moved from different bodies, he explains things like that. And his spiritual pursuits, Bodhisattva, he got the name from that. So, many people have got this Purva Janma Smriti or memory of their previous life. Great devotees also. Some Vaishnava saints, some Shaiva saints, they have spoken about this in their songs. That in previous lives I had gone through these things, and eventually due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord, I have now come back to His lotus feet, taking for some shelter. They will write that in their realizations. When they write the songs, they will mention these realizations. Just like they say, like the milk is mixed with the sugarcane juice and ghee, and how taste it is, the nectarian taste of that, they will express their happiness in coming back to Krishna after going through several lifetimes, wandering here, wandering there. Once we get our Purva Janma Smriti, or in other words, a memory of our previous lifetimes, we will also feel the gratefulness to Krishna for eventually that somehow we have landed at the right place, which we were looking for. The soul wanders around for what? Looking for happiness. And then happiness is never found anywhere, except at the Krishna's lotus feet. So till we get to Krishna's lotus feet, the search will continue, one way or the other. So that's what this important verse is telling us, that gone through as in the form of grass, in the form of a worm, and then in the form of a tree, in the form of a snake, then different demigods, animals, birds, bees, all sorts of forms we have accepted before, sages and everything. Eventually we have that I've got completely exhausted, this transmigration, what has happened to me. And after fully exhausted, I have come to this position now that I've started realizing what is truth. What is the truth? Krishna is the truth. Satyam param dhimahi. So, till I saw Krishna's lotus feet, when I saw Krishna's lotus feet, I realized and I got released from this cycle once for all, when I realized Krishna. So, when this journey of our journey through different species and different bodies stops at this point, when will that happen? That when we fully realize our consciousness inside, that we are soul, when we are not this body, and our identity as jiva completely is destroyed, and when you came to the pure platform of the soul, only then this journey will stop. Till that time, the journey will continue. Birth and death, punarabhi jananam, punarabhi maranam, punarabhi janani jadare shayanam, idi samsare bahudustare kravayapare pahimurare. In the Bhajagovindam prayers, you will see this. Punarabhi jananam, punarabhi maranam. First birth and then death again. Punarabhi janani jadare shayanam. Again goes and occupies in the womb of another mother somewhere. In some different species it could be. Idi samsare. This is called samsare. Bahudustare. It is a very difficult thing to get out. Kruvayapare pahimurare. Unless there is mercy coming from Krishna. Without Krishna's mercy, it's not going to happen. So this disease is called bhavam. Bhavam means this constantly changing body. It is a disease, bhavarogam. It is called bhavoshadi chotra manobhiramal. In the 10th canto you will see. Parishit Maharaj says, yad uttama shloka gunanuvadat puman virajyeta vina pashugnan. So bhavam is a disease. That means this transmigration of the soul, what's happening to it. Why is it a disease? Because you can see this changing body is not that what we desire now. The desire in us is always we want to become something, isn't it? We want to become something. In other words, in our own mind, we are developing an attitude like this. Oh, I have to progress and become something else later. Become something else later. Just like children. Children also, if you ask a young boy, ask him, what do you want to be in the future? He will say, according to his imagination, he will sometimes say he wants to be a pilot, or he wants to be a captain in a ship, or he wants to be a racing car driver, because this is his fanciful world where he lives in, isn't it? So all the time he is meditating, sometimes he's meditating if he is strongly desiring that way, or he wants to become a hero in a movie, or become a musician, or a big football player. All these are, I want to become this, I want to become that, isn't it? So his wanting to become something is in all of us. Only difference between a child and the adult is thinking on a different level, that he wants to become something. He is not satisfied. Why? Because his own identity, he does not know what it is. He is identifying with something else and thinking, I want to become that. Even this desire, I want to become a devotee. So this is also another, there is nothing to become. We already are that. This becoming is the disease called bhavaryogam. So as long as this want to become is happening inside, it happens in different levels. Sometimes it's I want to become a sannyasi, or I want to become a GBC, or I want to become a guru, or I want to become something else. So acharya or whatever that is. So wants to become something. And this wants to become must go from inside. There is nothing to become. Become what we want to need is that to realize this truth inside, who is inside, a watch which we are, and get out of this identification with the material body. So similarly, they'll say, I mean, if you are asking a student, he might say, I want to become an engineer, I want to become a doctor or a scientist or this or that. So wanting to become has been going on all the time through our mind. And this is the imagination in a person. That when after a lot of deep reflection, one is talked about the soul, what we are, when it is fully realized, he will know that there is nothing to become in this world. There is nothing to become in this world. This trying to become something is on a bodily level all the time. Anything you can take for that matter. If you are thinking of becoming something, that means it's on a bodily understanding. He has no self-realization. One who has self-realization, he will be peace with the world. He does not want to become anything. There is nothing to become here. Isn't it? This wanting to become something is coming from the bodily understanding. From the bodily understanding. That what we are actually, if you come to that understanding, then this, till that point, this desire will be there to become something. Therefore, we have to take all different kinds of bodies also, male body, female body. And in the modern world also, you can see, sometimes male is dressed up like a female, and female is dressed up like a male. All these things you can see among the musicians and all the celebrities, they do all sorts of things like this, isn't it? That this is because this thought inside that I want to become something, and there is something to be earned from that, something to achieve or attain in this world. But the soul is not willing to accept all these things you're wanting to become. That's only in your mind, all these things, isn't it? Soul doesn't surrender to that idea. That I want to become this, I want. This is all coming from the mind inside. So, as long as this desire is inside, any desires like this to become something, and as long as it is unfulfilled inside, that he has to leave this body with the desire inside. That desire will be inside while leaving the body. So, then the journey starts. Then the journey starts. And you'll keep on traveling like this. From one body to another, because he's wanting to become something has not stopped. When he gets into human body also, he is not sure whether he wants to be a human being or something different. Then the thought comes, so I want to become a demigod. I want to go to heavenly planets. Or somebody says, I want to become Apsara woman. I want to become a Miss Universe or Miss India or Miss this or Miss that. So many want to become. So according to that desire inside, even if it is spiritual, if there is no proper knowledge that there is nothing to become, this transmigration has to continue. So there was an interesting story about that. It is only just it is important to understand this. A brahmachari went to one Maharaj in Rishikesh, and he went there and had spent some time with this Maharaj studying different shastram from him. After 8 or 10 years he spent with him, the studies were over, and his Guru Maharaj told him, now you have one option, either you can go home. And if you still feel the desire to get married and live a family life, accept a wife and live for some time, and then eventually you can give it up and take to sannyasam and leave home. The alternative is that you can also take to sannyasam now, right now. Think about it, reflect over it and come back to me, he said. So this brahmachari left the Guru Maharaj and went away, and after a deep analysis of his own mind and nature, he came to the conclusion that he should enter into householder life. So he came and told his spiritual master that I do need to stay in householder life sometime, because I don't think I am still ready. I don't have that realization in me to take to sannyasa ashram properly and to live a proper sannyasi life. So Guru Maharaj told him that fine, there is nothing that it is in the shastram, grihastha ashram is allowed. But don't stay in the grihastha ashram forever. Go and get married and I'll come and call you after 10 years and take you back from there. You should be ready to leave grihastha ashram and come with me, and then you can take sannyasam, and then grihastha ashram desires will be over in the 10 years time. He says to him like that. So accordingly he agreed. And the brahmachari left home, left the ashram, went away. He went to his house, and in due course, in a few years' time, he decided to go for householder life. He had to earn some wealth also. He earned some wealth. It took a few years. And eventually he got married after 7 or 8 years. He got married, and he was trying to settle down with his wealth and the wife and everything together. So by then, 10 years, its time is over. So Guru Maharaj went there to see him. When he went to see him, the wife, because Guru Maharaj is a sannyasi, isn't it? So he went there, and when he saw him, the disciple remembered, oh, my Guru Maharaj has come. So he invited him inside the house, received him nicely, and gave him all a good reception and everything. So Guru Maharaj reminded him that, I come here after 10 years, as we discussed 10 years ago. I have come here now to take you to the sannyasa ashram. So that time the disciple says to him that, Guru Maharaj, you have to forgive me. When I left you, I was not fully realizing that you need so much wealth to live in the family life. And I had to work for quite a few years to acquire some wealth. And just only a couple of years ago, I got married. And it will not look nice now if I just leave her like this and come back with you. So can you come back after another 10 years, he says to his Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj said, okay. All the great souls and Mahatmas, they will always say, fine, accept it. They will never say no. At any time. Krishna is also like that. Fine, I'll go. He left. He went away. So another 10 years gone. Guru Maharaj, after 10 years, went again to bring him back. So this time when he went there, he saw a child was born for the couple, the disciple couple. A child was born, and the child has become 3 or 4 years old. So when again he reminded these things to his disciple said, does it look nice that if I leave this young child like this and I come with you for a sannyasa ashram, so could you not give me another 10 years time till he is grown up and then I can hand over everything to him and I'll come with you. He promised like this to Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj said, fine, I'll come after 10 years, he said. He went away. So after 10 years, he went back again to get him out. So when he went there, what he saw there was that another child was born. He had 2 children by now. And the younger child was there. One was a boy and the other one was a girl. So the disciple says to the Guru Maharaj, the younger one is not fully ready to accept all the responsibility, and the young girl has to be married also. And it doesn't look proper for me to leave home like this and come away from this place. So could you not wait for another 10 years? He says, yes, I'll come after 10 years. He went away again. So after that, he goes back to him. After 10 years, Guru Maharaj comes back to him to take him from here back to his ashram. So when he came this time, the disciple has grown old. Disciple has grown old. And he was so old that he could not move his body either. He was in a very sick state. And he says to Guru Maharaj that, what can I do now? I'm gone so old. And I'm not in a position to move away from this house. Physically I'm finished. And plus, I have this family, my wife, my children, grandchildren, they are all there. And if I leave all these things and come with you, what is the point me coming with you? He says to him. So Guru Maharaj said, fine, I'll go then, he says. So he left, he went away. Then after a few years, Guru Maharaj came to this house, and by now this granddad was this disciple was dead and gone. He was dead and gone. So because he was passing through that way, he dropped in to see if his disciple is still living or not. When he went there, nobody could recognize him. So one grandchild who was sitting there, who was playing there, he says to this Guru Maharaj, oh, my granddad died and he has gone, he says. So there was a dog which was standing there and barking at him. So the Guru Maharaj says to the child, he has not gone. There he is, he says, pointing out to the dog. So he started telling the dog, asking the dog, he started speaking to the dog. The dog says, I fully respect you, I know who you are. The dog is answering back, but I can't come with you. You know, all this property and all I have created, who will look after this if I go from here? So I am standing here watching all this property, what I have made in my life. So he won't leave still. So the child did not understand what he was talking about. But the daughter, that is the daughter of the disciple who was there, he told her that this is your father who is standing here. That means the child's mother is telling her that this is your father who is standing here. He is looking after your property, what he has acquired with a lot of difficulty in this life. So he kept talking like this, and then he left again. He went back, went away from here, from there. So meanwhile, the dog doesn't have a long life, isn't it? 10 years or 12 years they live. The dog died. Dog died, and the Guru Maharaj one day by chance came that way again. When he came that way, that he was out of curiosity to see what has happened. He asked the family members, what has happened to the dog? This is the dog died, the family member says. So somebody from inside came and said that there is a snake inside near the cash box inside the house. There's a snake inside. So Guru Maharaj told them, you beat that snake, but don't kill him. Beat the snake and throw him out, he said. So they beat the snake, as he said, and threw the snake out. And he took the snake and put it on his shoulder and walked out from there. So at that point, the snake was given some intelligence by this snake is that same disciple. Even after the dog's body, it hasn't left the attachment to its own assets and properties and all that. So Guru Maharaj says to him that I had to get you beaten because you won't leave that place otherwise. But I told them not to kill you because you have to come back to me. So at that point, the snake gets a liberation from that body and it says like this, that in spite of my deep attachment to my family, wife, children, and the property, wealth, everything, this Guru Maharaj kept on insisting, coming back to me to get me out of this, to that truth. Guru Tattvam it's called. It's called Guru Tattvam. Guru Tattvam means this. Guru is not a person we are talking about. Guru is actually Krishna's a tattvam. It's a principle that it manifests in this world to retrieve people from the materialistic life to the spiritual truth. So the manifestation of Guru Tattvam is Krishna. So seeing that, Guru Maharaj is glorifying Krishna's this aspect of Guru principle. In other words, Krishna is glorifying this aspect of Guru principle, that Krishna is coming in different forms and never giving it up, in spite of the fact that I was so ignorant and kept on hammering to my attachment, holding on to my attachment to this world. But in spite of all that, eventually he has come and picked me up from here. After getting barking there and getting beaten like this, now I have come to my senses. What an ignorant person I was. Saying like this, he glorifies Krishna for Krishna's mercy, that magnanimity to get you out of this material life. First he comes as a guru And then he sends other people. He sends you all kinds of messages in the form of emails and telephone calls and diseases and different kinds of distresses. He gives you everything to leave this and come back. Somehow or the other come to the pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness. But every time, this snake is saying, every time I made some excuse or the other not to go with him. Whenever he was trying to get me out, I'll make another one excuse or the other. Either my wife is young and the children are young and they are not married, and you know, some excuse or the other I made not to go to take to spiritual life. So to that guru principle, guru tattvam, I pay my respectful obeisances. He says, Krishna's this aspect of Krishna. It is Krishna's arrangement that somehow or the other conditioned soul, when Krishna wants somebody to come back, he'll make sure it will happen. Only thing is, Krishna takes his own time. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, it doesn't matter. Whatever amount of time it takes, eventually Krishna will take him out from this. And to that Guru Tattvam, he says, I pay my respectful obeisances to him. That, so in this story, that we have this understanding that one birth to another birth, the transmigration goes on, and the desire to leave from one body to another. Why? Desires we have created. That's why we have to change the body. Vasamsi jirnai yatha vihaya. I mentioned this yesterday, that it is not the body that is getting old. It is the vasanas that is changing the body. Otherwise, it doesn't make any logic. That child also is losing its body sometimes. So that is the proof that it is not based on the aging of the body that you change the body. It is based on the fulfillment of the vasanas that you change the body. Vasamsa jirnai yatha vihaya navani grihnadi naroparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirna anyadi samyadi navani dehi. It has to move because desires have been built up inside, and accordingly we are compelled to go from one body to another. Then and it is then that Krishna spoke that you can do anything with the body. You can do anything with the body, isn't it? You can cut the body. You can with a sword you can cut the body. You can pierce the body with a spear. Whatever you have done, that it doesn't touch the soul. It doesn't touch the soul inside. That is why we saw those two verses. Krishna was stressing out this point. Nainam chindandi shastrani, nainam dahadi pavaga. Na chainam kladayandhyapo, na shoshayati maruta. Verse 23. Nainam chindandi shastrani, nainam dahadi pavaga. Na chainam kladayandhyapo, na shoshayati maruta. Achedyoyamadahyoyam, akledyo shoshyame vaja. Nityam sarvagadastanu, achaloyam sanatana. The characteristics of the soul, Krishna is talking about. The soul, under no circumstances that it can cut by shastra, means weapon. Through a weapon, you can never cut it under any circumstances. Even if you try to cut the body, it will not touch the soul. So the feel that you are hurting somebody is only based on the bodily understanding. And what else? Nainam dahadi pavaka, that the fire cannot burn the soul under any conditions. Na jainam kledayandhyapo. Apa means water. Water cannot wet the soul. Na shoshayati maruta. It cannot be dried up by the air. Air cannot touch that. Achedyoyam adahyoyam akledyo shoshyam evacham. Achedyoyam. That atma cannot be cut into pieces. Achedyam. It cannot be broken. Then adahyoyam. You cannot burn the soul. And and ab adahyoyam akledyo shoshyame vaja nityaha. Nityaha means he is always there. Always he is nityam. He has no, he is not temporary. He is always existing. Sarvagadaham. That he will get everywhere. He can reach anywhere he wants. Sarvagada. That is the quality of the soul. This sarvagada means that by his presence anywhere, he can get, by his consciousness, he can get anywhere. In other words, isn't it? He can experience anything anywhere in the creation simply by his consciousness. Consciousness is that is Sarvagata. That Sarvagata is like that. That it is not like, on a material terms, we think, if I say from here, I have to go to London, I have to travel 15 miles. We say like that, isn't it? But soul is not like that. Sarvagada, he is present there also. He is present here as well. Sarvagada sthanuhu. Sthanu means he is very much, very much firm in his situation. Very firmly established. Achalaha. Sarvagada sthanu achalavayam sanatana. Achala means he does not move. He does not move. Sanatana, and he is eternal also. Why these things were spoken? Krishna has spoken these things for only one reason. That the soul inside, which is our actual nature, is these things. This is our nature. All these things, what is spoken here, is our true nature. This is our true nature. Then all these things should be there in our spiritual nature. That means in a realized soul, all these things, qualities will be very firm. He'll be very conscious of all these things. At the moment when somebody shows a knife at us, we get frightened, isn't it? We get frightened immediately. Why? Because of identity with the body. But if there's identity with the soul, it doesn't happen. Because he knows that it is not me, I'm not the body. So that realization is complete, so the knife doesn't frighten him anymore. So, Nityaha Sarvagadaha Sthanu Achalaha Sanatanaha. This is all the consciousness inside of the realized soul. The realized soul will have all these two verses. What Krishna has spoken about the soul will be complete within himself. Every moment it is there. And this is his consciousness. And Kalatitam. Time is also time and space, two things, isn't it? Time and space, two things. So consciousness, that is the symptom of the soul inside. The soul's consciousness is its symptom inside, and time is the symptom outside. Why do we say like that? If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there that when Parikshit Maharaj was talking just in the beginning of the 10th canto, he says here, Viryani tasyaghila dehabhajam andarbahi purusha kala rupai. Andarbahi purusha kala rupai. He says there that Viryani tasyaghila dehabhajam, that in your understanding of Krishna, Krishna is present inside in the form of consciousness as the soul, and outside he is present in the form of time. Time is Krishna outside, and consciousness is Krishna inside a person. Viryani tasyagila dehabhajam andarbahi andarbahi purusha kala rupai. In the form of time he is present outside, and in the form of soul, consciousness he is present inside. And Krishna also says there, and Parikshit Maharaj also says there, Prayachade mrityu mrudamrutam cha maya manushyasya vadasu vidvan. That's a very important word. Prayachade mrityu mrudamrutam cha. That if you take shelter of this thing called a time outside, you will experience death. If you identify with the time outside, you will experience death. Prayachya mrityu. And if you experience it, if you take the shelter of that consciousness inside, it will make you feel nectar-like. You will get a nectarian experience, in other words. Mrityu amrutam mrutam cha. That you will become conscious at that you are eternal. And this full understanding of a nectarian experience it is. Brahman realization, in other words, he's saying, maya manushyasya vadasya vidvan. These two games, who is playing? Krishna is playing. Which one? Outside as a time, inside as consciousness. Krishna is playing that role. That is what Parikshit Maharaj mentioned this to Sudev Goswami in the Bhagavatam. So from this you can see time and space, time and inside as consciousness, and Krishna is putting us into that situation. Outside it is death, isn't it? Time means death. Inside it is consciousness, that means living eternal. Inside is, once you go in, it's eternal life. isn't it? Once you identify with the soul, the life is eternal. But once you go outside the body and start looking in outside, outwardly, then you have to experience death also. That's what that prayachado mrtyu madamrtam cha maya manushyasya vadasa vidvan. Both are Krishna's forms. In two different forms Krishna's appearing. Outside in the form of death and inside in the form of eternal life. Krishna is offering to us that it is up to us to decide whether you want a death or you want the eternal existence, amrtattvam. If you want the death, you can wander around in this world looking outside. But you want the eternal existence, you have to go inwards. There is no other alternative. Both are from Krishna, coming from Krishna. Krishna also says this to Arjuna, isn't it? Kalosmi loka chagal pravrta logan samahartum iha pravrta hudevithuanna bhavishyandi sarve evastido pratyani geshu yodha. When universal form was shown to Arjuna, when Arjuna saw the universal form, he was frightened, isn't it? All these different aspects of Krishna he was witnessing. And then at that point he says, Kalosmi. Krishna says, I am Kalam, time personified. Logakshayagral pravardha, this which destroys this whole world creation. Kalosmi logakshayagral pravardha. Logan samahartum iha pravardha. I swallow the whole world at some point. To myself, I take back everything into me. He goes inside. So, Kalosmi. Krishna says, Kalosmi. I am time personified. So, time outside makes us this experience of death in us. Once you released from the experience of time, then you are released from the experience of death as well. Death is not anymore a factor. Then, this time is an interesting thing to study and to think about. We say that the time, what we have measurement here, is based on the sun, isn't it? Sun rising, sun setting, and this 24-hour cycle which we have created here in this world for our convenience for life here. But from the Vedanta point of view, when mind is born, time is born. When the mind is born, time is born. When does the mind is born? Mind is born when Chittavritti starts inside, isn't it? If there is, say, imagine there is no thoughts coming through inside, that means there is no mind existing. There is no such thing called time either. Time doesn't exist at that time. The experience of time in this world, for example, because we got, this is in Shastram, they call it as Adhyasam. Adhyasam means that something you keep on doing in this world, you will become that. Isn't it? You become that. You will get used to it so much. For example, we have come at this here, now at 4 o'clock, isn't it? In our mind, it's very strongly deep-rooted. At 6 o'clock, we must go from here. Because if I don't leave at 6, I won't be able to get to work at 7 or 8 or whatever time. So, this time concept is so deeply inside. Why? Because this chittavritti is going through the mind all the time. In the mind, it's very deeply embedded that if I don't leave at 6, I won't make it to work at 7, or I won't be able to do whatever I had plans, because all these things have been planned yesterday itself for today. It is on that we are coming here in the morning, that today's activities are already thought of. While waking up in the morning itself, important things, they'll also come on a priority basis right in front of us, all what we have to do today. So we are under the grip of this thing called time. And this time is born when the mind was born. Mind means chittavritti. Chittavritti is going on. So realized Mahatma souls, they don't take this anymore into their account. That is not a factor anymore. Then, and that you can also see when you go to sleep, suppose you have slept very well for 7 or 8 hours, you slept well, and you are still sleeping, somebody woke you up. Alarm struck 6 or 6:30 or something, you woke up and you start thinking, oh, I didn't know I slept for 6 hours. You say like that, isn't it? That you didn't, that means you are not conscious of the time. And that, man, 6 hours, you are not even conscious of the time. So when you go to deep sleep, you are not conscious of the time. You are conscious of the time in the wakened state. very much conscious of the time in the vacant state. That is another important something. Suppose you are enjoying something very nicely, a musical concert or a nice nice conversation, you will always think, oh, time is going so fast. On the other hand, say like a Bhagavad Gita class, you're getting very bored, you're always looking at the watch, when will it be 6 o'clock, when can I go, you know, when will it finish. So on one time, the same time is giving you one feeling at one moment, another feeling at another moment. So it all depends on that, how much you are in anubhuti. Anubhuti means that blissful experience you have. Accordingly, your time is not a factor anymore. That's why many, many great personalities say there that one who has drunk the milk of para, para means this knowledge of self-realization, for him, 10,000 years is just like a minute, like that it will go. Why? That experience is so blissful that you cannot even imagine that so much time has passed through. Even just like the fingers, the claws like this, that much time you feel has gone through 10,000 years in the blissful realized state. On the other hand, it also says here that that if you are not, if you have no realizations at all, everything is a drag. Everything is a drag. Sometimes people say like that, isn't it? That the experiences like that. You can. So when our attention or consciousness is involved with dead matter, jadavastu, in other words, it is called jadavastu, even a small amount of time will appear as though it's thousands of years. The other way, the opposite thing. Like when we are gone and realize the self, 10,000 years will appear like a second. But if our attention is on a dead matter all the time, what will happen is even a small amount of time will appear as though it's taking thousands of years. So the opposite way, the impact of time on us, that's what we are talking about. Impact of time on us in two different situations. Just like sometimes you sit in the office and keep looking, isn't it? It's not 5 o'clock yet. You keep looking to get out of the place. Mm-hmm. You had enough of it by the day. So why is it? Because attention is all on the matter. The business, all the nonsense, what's going on there. So completely absorbed in that, isn't it? So time... we are caught up in this net of time and space also. So that is that word Krishna is referring to, nityam, nityam. You know, nityam sarvagadastanu achaloyam sanatana, Krishna says there, isn't it? That nityam is this what Krishna is referring to. We are thinking nityam means, oh, he's always existing. Like me, I will be living forever. That's not the Nityam he's talking about. Nityam is this experience of time like this. That realized state, you will experience there is no influence of time. But when we read it, we think like Nityam means, yeah, he could be living much longer. Again, we are putting time onto it. But time you can't put on the soul. Soul has nothing to do with the time. Time and space is for the jiva. For the conditioned state, all these things apply. That's what I was saying yesterday, that when we are coming to the absolute platform, all our mundane calculations and mundane rules and regulations, you can't impose on the truth. Truth is transcendental to all that. And Krishna is saying, when you have come to reach that platform, you are always liberated. If you come to that stage, even here, right now, in this world, you are liberated. That's why, gunasya maya mulatval, name moksho na bandhanam. He says in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? So, what is Krishna's form? Krishna's form is like that. Nityam, Sarvagada, Sthanu, Achalam, Sanatana. These are all Krishna's qualities, isn't it? They are all the soul's qualities, in other words. So, once we lift ourselves up to that state of consciousness, Krishna says, you also can experience all these things. What is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, time, generally, in this world, we divide that into three types, isn't it? Three time kinds, isn't it? Past, present, and future. Past, present, and future. Now, the from our point of view, if you look at it seriously, you can see interesting thing here. Past, we know what happened. Bhudham, it's called, isn't it? Bhudagalam. We know the past. Because why? Why do we know the past? Because it's in our memory. It's in our memory. All what has happened in the last 30, 40 years, we keep it in our head. Memory, it's there. Bhavi, that means the future, is all in our imagination, isn't it? What will happen after 10 years, we don't know. Where we will end up, we don't know. What disease we'll get, we don't know. When we will be, where, which hospital will be lying, we don't know. It's all in the imagination. And whether we'll be healthy then, or whether we'll be at the mercy of somebody else, we don't know anything about it, isn't it? All unknown entities. So it's all in our imagination. And we think these two things are real, isn't it? Bhavi, Bhudham and Bhavi, past and the future. What the mind does is, based on the past, whatever that we have experienced, it keeps interpreting the future. And this is what mind does inside. Now, there is one thing in between called present, isn't it? Past, present, future. So, past is all in the memory. Future is all in the imagination. It's all in our imagination. Now, this thing called present, this is what you should carefully think about this. The thing called present, the moment you touch that with your mind, it has become past. Have you noticed that? Suppose I am speaking now, presently I am speaking, but the moment I have spoken, it's become past. Isn't it? So the mind has got one difficulty, it cannot touch the present. Mind can only touch the past and mind can only touch the future. Mind cannot touch the present. Krishna is saying that unless you live in the present, you are not living spiritual life. You see the point what Krishna is making? Krishna is saying, past is not important, future is not important, present is important. That means a person who is self-realized or who has come to the spiritual platform, he lives in the present. Every moment he is doing what is to be done at that point. He doesn't think about the past. He doesn't think about the future. He doesn't make plans for the future. He doesn't lament about the past. He lives in the present. That is the nature of a spiritually realized soul. Continuously doing what he has to do every moment, every second at that point. In other words, a spiritually advanced person, he lives in the present. He doesn't live in the past. He doesn't live in the future. Materialistic people, they always live in the past and always lives in the future. Why? Spiritually advanced person's mind doesn't work. He has no mind at that time. Now, this is another important point. Our nature and our experience is to always capture with the mind everything. So even after hearing Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, they will say, I'm not able to understand. That will be the comment first thing. I don't fully understand what Krishna is saying. I'm trying this. So in other words, you are trying to capture something with your mind and the intelligence. Mind and the intelligence. This is, Krishna rejects this. This is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not to bring everything into control of your mind. You have to leave the mind at some point. And you must know that with the mind, I can't understand everything. Mind is some entity which was born at the time when you woke up. From the soul it comes out. It creates a lot of mischief in this world for us. And it goes and dissolves itself in the night when you sleep, isn't it? So that's all the mind does. But what happens to us? We got so used to this thing called mind that in everything we brings the mind in to know it. Even in spiritual life. When Krishna says something, we'll use the mind to measure it. To what Krishna's words, or Krishna's comments, or Krishna's instructions. We want to bring it into our mental faculty and measure it out and check it out whether it is all meets the mental needs what we have. But transcendental knowledge is above mind. It cannot be subjected to mental speculation or mental adjustment. Nothing will work. On the transcendental. That's why Krishna, whenever he spoke on the absolute information, absolute knowledge about the soul, absolute, on a platform when he spoke things, those things are not for the mind or the intelligence to analyze anything. They're not meant for that. If you take it for thinking, oh, reflection means what? Reflection is not putting it through the mind. Not always. Although it's called mananam, reflection is this. The reflection is Krishna has spoken like this. My mind should not have anything to do with it. The truth Krishna has spoken, I accept it without any reservations on that. But if you start finding logic through, if you start applying logic into everything, you may not find the answer. You may not be able to find the answer. So Krishna says here that in the transmigration of the soul also, or the qualities of the soul, what Krishna has spoken, as soon as you touch something with the mind, as soon as you, for example, you take like this example mentioned here, then it can imagine the it can imagine the past, the mind, sorry, remember the past, and future it can imagine itself. The mind can do that. The past it remembers and the future it imagines. This is what the mind is always doing, isn't it? mind has got only one thing, all what has happened in the past and what is going to happen in the future. The present state, mind never be able to touch it. Do you know what I'm saying? That mind cannot touch the present. As soon as you touch, mind touch the present, it's become past. Immediately it has become past, isn't it? So, it cannot never touch the present. mind cannot touch that. When we find that, so therefore we have to know that these three things what we have created, past, present and the future, three type of timings, isn't it? Times what we have created, there is some flaw there, isn't it? Only two things you are actually, we have, past and the future, based on the mind. The present is never touched by the mind. So, for example, if I say, I become 60 years old, it's only the memory now, isn't it? It's not in my experience now. What experience have I got that I am to prove that I'm 60 years now? It's in my memory now. All that what has happened in the last 60 years, it's in my memory. Then, and in this memory, not everything will come up, isn't it? If somebody asks me, can you tell me everything what happened in the last 60 years? I don't know. Some things I remember, which I can mention, but I won't remember from day one what happened right up to this point. I won't remember. Then, so in other words, it's all in the memory only. Some things are in the memory, not in the experience right now. So, present means experience. You are right at that point experiencing it. That is called present. Past is all, it's in the memory. Future is all in the imagination. So, if you understand it like this, past is all in the memory. Present is all what you are experiencing right now in your experience. But neither the past nor the future is in my experience. Past is all in the memory and future is all imagination. In experience, only very few things, what I am doing right now, I am speaking, that is in my experience. Isn't it? It's my experience at the moment. So, in the experience, only few things comes. Only few things comes. In the memory, many things can come, and imagination, so many things can come. That's created by the mind. So, in spiritual life, we have to give up these two things. The past, which is in the memory, and the future, what is imagination, and we have to live in the present, in other words, in experience. So, that's why spiritual experience is anubhavam. It's not pratiti, or it's not imagination, anything. It's purely you're experiencing right now, and that's spiritual life. Right now, what's happening? That who speaks about this? That when this present time, what we are experiencing as present, it becomes a continuous flow. All the time in that consciousness, if you live like that, he says there, that is called present. See, for example, you are remembering Krishna constantly, continuously, without moving mind, without in any moving in any other direction. that it does not become past, it does not become future. And then in living in the present all the time, Krishna calls that spiritual life. And that is called samadhi. Samadhi state is like that. In samadhi state, you don't think, oh, I've been in samadhi for 2 hours. Or I will be in samadhi for 6 hours. You don't impose these conditions onto samadhi. Samadhi is experience at that present. Moment what you are experiencing, that is samadhi. Why? In samadhi situation, the mind is not functioning anymore. All the vikalpams have gone. So mind will not dictate to you anything. It will not impose time upon you. Mind withdraws. The time is not imposed upon you anymore. That is the beauty of that samadhi state. In Yoga Vasishtam, Ramachandra, Vasishtha Maharshi spoke to Ramachandra like this. Vartamanam anayasam bhajet. That live in the present all the time without struggle. Anayasam bhajet. Bhudham bhavishyadi abhajad yadi chittam. Don't fall into past or don't fall into future. This is Vasishtha Maharshi's instructions to Ramachandra. Vartamanam anayasam bhajet. Live as long as you want in the present, but never fall into bhuta bhavishyadi abhajad yadi chittam. Not allow chittam inside to fall into the past or into the future. That's spiritual life. He says to Ramachandra, Ramachandra, that is a samadhi state. Because Vasishtha Maharshi taught Ramachandra the science of the soul when he was a little boy. You will see that in the Ramayana. Many years Ramachandra was instructed by Vasishtha Maharshi in the Vasishtha Maharshi was born from Brahma. And this Vasishtha Maharshi, when he was born, he was perfect in knowledge. Perfect in knowledge. So when they sent him, Brahma decided to send him to instruct Ramachandra, there was a problem. What was the problem? Problem was, he was so self-realized that he couldn't come and speak here. Such a deep realization. So Brahma had to put some avidya into him to come here, to become a part of the family of the solar dynasty, because he was the chief advisor or spiritual advisor for the whole solar dynasty. If you look, Ikshvaku onwards, Dasharatha, Raghu, and now Ramachandra, all of them had spiritual training from Vasishtha. So Vasishtha was so realized that when he had to come here, he had to take some avidya in him to become part of this royal family then. So that was the state of realization. So he is instructing Ramachandra like this, Vartamanam anayasam bhajet. You can continue living in present as long as you want. That is realized state. But bhudham bhavishyadi abhajal yadi chittam. Never at any moment allow the mind to fall into the past or into the future. This is a very important instruction for those who are practicing spiritual life. Materialist nature, what is it? They will create charts and statistics for hundreds of years. For everything, they have charts and statistics. Isn't it? Based on that, they will interpret the future weather. For hundreds of years, they'll tell you what will happen, how much the temperature will rise. This is materialistic consciousness, which we know very well how it works, isn't it? Everything is based on statistics. They believe in that so strongly, don't they? In statistics. And Krishna says, completely rejects this thing called statistics. Statistics, as far as Krishna is concerned, is a total nonsense. It's a total nonsense. And what happened to us? After several years of getting used to these statistics, we also become one statistics one day. Isn't it? It happens to us, all of us. We get driven by, this is not spiritual. This is a completely materialistic nonsense, this thing called statistics. And that's why, in other words, Vasishtha knew this. This is the problem. So he told Ramachandra, how many millions of years ago, don't get into statistics. He said, and we have not left it. But they left it millions of years ago. We haven't left it. We still have so much absolute faith in the thing called statistics. So, Krishna says, this subtle science of the soul, we should not impose all our material thoughts and material conceptions onto it. Because then it, that is why we are finding it so difficult to understand many things in the Shastram when it's spoken. We find it very difficult to capture it. Why? The materialistic thinking and materialistic nature in us is interpreting everything in a different way. Instead of allowing it to be pure and its free form, if you accept it, it's not difficult at all. So Krishna says that here. And future is imaginary. Future is an imaginary thing. And bhudam bhavish vartamanam anayasam bhudam bhavish bhuta bhavishyati abhajal yati chittam Rama. He says here, always focused on the present without allowing the mind to go into the past or to the future. If you keep your chittam consciousness like that, he says here that then the mind will not be able to work. Mind will not be able to function. Mind will not be able to function because mind cannot touch the present. So if you want to get yourself free from the influence of the mind, the Ramachandra Vasishtha Maharshi says here, the right thing to do is not allowing the mind to go into the past or the future, and in that such a situation, your chittam or consciousness or the thoughts will not be influenced by the past or the future, and you will always stay in the present, and mind will not come in. If you do that, he says, the mind will turn into ashes. Mind will die. Mind will turn into ashes. Because mind cannot stand in the present. Mind has no support at that time to stand in the present. Mind can only do this thing, interpreting the past and imagining the future. That's all the mind does. If you look at your own mind, you can see that, isn't it? Present it cannot do. Then, therefore, in the Upanishads, this states that Samvit Swarupam. Samvit means the soul by nature is present. He lives in present. The soul, that is, it's called Samvit. There's a word called Samvit used because it lives in the present. Soul doesn't live in the past or lives in the future. Why? It is eternal, isn't it? So eternal, really eternal, 100% eternal. So therefore, it never gets affected by past and future. Past and future. So in order to do that, that in the fire of that Samvit knowledge, and we have to burn the past and the future. We have to burn the past and the future. Because past and the future is not truth. It's a false. It's a lie. Past and the future is a lie. It's only a mental experience. It's only a mental experience. It has no value anything more than that. No value. In your mind, you have experienced something. Mind created this past. Mind created the future as well. And it has no more reality than that. That's the point he's saying here. Why? Because you can see that today we were talking about yesterday, isn't it? Some people at the old age, they forget everything, isn't it? Dementia or what they call Alzheimer. These diseases. Once you get that, what value has it got from their experience from the past? They will not be saying anymore to you, oh, in my past experience I had this. Because there's no experience left anymore to tell you anything anymore. So that clearly shows to us that the experiences, what we are having in this world, not to give too much importance to it. It doesn't mean anything. The experiences in this world. Some people, we also get driven by that. Sometimes in the office, they'll say, oh, he's very experienced, you will say, about somebody. He's got so much experience. So that means we take it for granted that he's highly learned and highly realized or highly experienced. Because of this, 40, 50 years he has been doing the donkey job, he becomes highly, highly experienced he is. Right? But from the spiritual platform, he is an ignorant fool because he is depending on his so-called experience. He is not living at the moment. He is not living. And especially you can see when you are getting close to retirement that you are hanging on there. All the young people had come and taken over everything. And you are helpless because you are living in the past all the time. 40 years ago when I joined this company, it was like this, it was like that. You'll be glorifying a lot of things. And these young people who had come, they have no experience of what happened 40 years ago. So they'll say the old man is not leaving the place still, he's still hanging around here, he's waiting for his pension or retirement or whatever that is going to happen. So before all this happens, you should get out from there. It's a wise thing to do. If you hang on to this, you will be kicked by the material nature, because Krishna says here that living in the past, living in the future are both bad. You should know in the present, this is what is more important. What? Spiritual life is more important than all the other nonsense in this world. They are there because the body is there. But if you keep on hammering on that and get attached to it, thinking that, oh, if I can work, make, they will lift the pension age 65, 66, 80, they'll make it 80 also at the end. If you start dancing onto that tune, you will be lost. That's a warning. That rule you cannot modify, like you lift the pension age. You can't change that rule. That rule will come and play its game, play its role at the right time when it's due. So if you keep your consciousness clear and consciousness all the time absorbed in the Krishna consciousness, then this change won't matter, because all these changes is for the asat. For the matter, material body, it's not for the soul. This is called living in eternity. Living in eternity. So, here, what I mentioned about that, time and same thing with space also. All this is in relationship with the time. Now, if you take, for example, in relationship with the space, we have this concept very strongly in us that we measured the diameter of the planet. We measure the distance from A to B, all these things, isn't it? So measurement of distance, measurement of space, in other words, is deep-rooted in us. We always talk in terms of that, isn't it? How many miles here, how many miles there. So naturally it becomes our habit to think everything in terms of space. Yesterday they found out that Saturn has got some other ring around, I believe. They're running around there after that, and they're measuring the length of that ring now. So it keeps them busy going like this, doing some nonsense or the other. So if they had come to spiritual understanding, they'll know that this thing called the time and space is also something very false. It's a false thing. It's not a real thing, isn't it? And what do I gain by knowing the diameter of the Saturn? What does it help me? And in my right now, I am struggling here with this body and with my mind. If somebody comes and tells me Saturn has got so much diameter, or Saturn has got this ring around, does it solve any problem for me? So, in unnecessarily wasting time and energy, and misleading people in this way, this is all what they are doing. Nothing else, nothing realistic. Then, no benefit to anybody, isn't it? All what they have done so far. So this is called materialism, materialistic knowledge, materialistic knowledge. And these are the people who are guiding the world. So you can imagine where it's going to end up with. So what I'm saying is that the time and space are two things which very forcefully affect us in everyday life. Very forcefully affect us in everyday life. Every knowledge, every information that comes to us is coming through these two channels, time and space, isn't it? Whole daily activities are controlled by the time. Whole knowledge is based on the space also, to a large extent. Such a powerful influence on us, I'm saying. Krishna is saying that these two things really doesn't exist. It's Maya that has created these two things. It's Maya that has created these two things. In your self-realized states, these things cannot touch you. They have nothing to do with you, time and space. So don't get victimized by that. That's why when you want to live in a spiritual life, you have to leave behind these things and come to the absolute platform of the soul. And souls by nature, and that is called knowledge. Jnanis are those who lives in this consciousness that I'm not bound by time, I'm not bound by space. Once to a sage, an American citizen came to see him in India, and he wanted to take him to America. And this person was living in a village in a simple way with all this understanding of time and space. He was living there. So our visitor came and spoke to him, and he said, well, you know, everybody says that you are a self-realized soul. He has not understood what self-realization means. The visitor hasn't understood anything about self-realization. All he heard is, this person is a Mahatma, everybody is respecting him. He must have something deep message to give. So he says to him, why don't you come with me to America and spend some time? It will help a lot of people there. So he answered him, saying like this. He says, America is right here, right now. Where is America? He says, America is for you. For me, America doesn't exist. He says, it's all consciousness everywhere. What is this America you are talking about? So sometimes this difficulty comes for a spiritually realized soul and a materially conditioned person. When they make conversation each other, they cannot understand what they are talking to each other. One is talking from one plane, another is talking from another plane. So the conditioned soul won't understand the other thing, whereas the other person will understand the conditioned soul's problem, that he is not able to understand his point of view. So when he answered him also, he has not understood. America is in me, he says. America is here right now, he says. This is the same thing he was talking about before. Alexander came, invading so many countries to India eventually. So when Alexander left Greece, Aristotle, who was his mentor, as they say now, mentor, isn't it? It's a word. So the mentor told him that in India you will find a lot of realized personalities, jnanis there. Can you bring some of them with you back when you come back from there, he says. So he kept this in his mind. And when he came here, he invaded many countries and arrived in India. And then he went through, while passing through Benares, he came to know about a jnani who lived there. And what he did first was he sent his minister to get him, to bring him and so that he could talk to him. So he sent his minister. Minister went there. So when the minister went there, this realized personality is lying underneath the tree, fully relaxed, and didn't have anything, no possessions, nothing, just lying there underneath the tree, looking at the sun, enjoying the sunshine, and lying like that. So minister had no clue, what is this Alexander after? So he goes to the jnani and says to him, that the king wants you to come. Alexander is very powerful at that time. He says, the king wants to see you. So he looked at him and he says to him, what? What do you mean the king wants to? He says, don't you know that there is a king who rules this country? He says, which country? He says, for him there is no country, there is no king, nothing exists. So he kept saying like this, but the minister gets very angry with him. He just wanted to punish him. But then he had a little fear inside that Alexander has asked me to bring him. So that means Alexander must have some respect for him. That's why he wants him to come. So I won't say anything. So without speaking one word, he goes back to Alexander again and says to Alexander that he's not willing to come. He's not willing to come, he says. So Alexander himself starts to going to him. He goes to him. And in a respectful way, Alexander has spoken, because Aristotle has told him, there are so many jnanis, you won't be able to even identify them. And if you do identify them, even to enthuse them to do anything is very difficult, because they are free from karma also, isn't it? So he went to see this person. Alexander goes there, and Alexander starts the conversation. He thought that probably by offering him some bribe, in some form. That's how all the kings do, isn't it? When they want to get something done, they make a payment somewhere along the line and to get the job done. So Alexander thought the same thing. So Alexander was telling him, why you are suffering like this underneath the tree, lying like this, he says. Can I do something so that you can come back with us to Greece and live a comfortable life in Greece and all that? So he says to Alexander, Greece doesn't exist, he says. Greece doesn't exist for me. So this Alexander is not able to capture the message behind it. Because when jnanis talk, they talk very little. They are not going to explain to Alexander and make himself realize straight away. He'll just give the answer and keep quiet. Alexander thought for a while, and then he says to him that, what shall I do so that you can come with me, he says. He says, where, he says. I don't have to go anywhere. I'm carefully situated, he says. If you can do me one favor, just move away from there so that I can see the sunshine and enjoy the sunshine a bit. He says, that's all the favor I'm asking, he says. So Alexander pulled out his sword and wanted to punish him, thinking that he is very disobedient and trying to be very funny. At that time he laughed, this jnani laughed. Why? അഛേദ്യോയം അദാഹ്യോയം അക്ലേദ്യോ ശോഷ്യമേവച. That realization in him was so deep, what he said to Alexander was that these two verses in the from the Bhagavad Gita. Then achadyoyam adahyoyam akledyo shoshyamevacha machainam kledayandya nityam sarvagadasthanu achaloyam sanatana. You can't touch it. What are you trying to do with me, with my body? If you want to kill it, kill it. It doesn't matter what happens. So jnani means he is in this consciousness all the time. He is realized. Realized means these two verses. Which one? Nainam chindanti shastrani. You are taking your weapon to kill me. What can you kill? Nainam dahadi pavaga. Your fire cannot burn me. Naichainam kledayandhyapo nashoshayati maruta. Water cannot wet this me. And nor it can be dried up by the wind. Achedyoyam adahyoyam. You can't burn this, you can't cut it. Akledyo shoshimevaja. Nityam, I am eternal. That consciousness is what he is talking about. It is a consciousness. Nityam. Nobody can destroy me. Sarvagada, and I am free to go where I want to go. Sthanu, I am firm in this. Achalavayam, I will not shake from that position. Sanatana, I am eternal. So all these qualities what Krishna has mentioned here is our nature. Is our true nature. And jnanis who are fixed in that nature, they cannot be touched by Alexander or anybody. Eventually, Alexander came to his senses when he saw this firmness in that jnani, in his realizations. He pays his obeisances to the jnani. So the jnani told him, it is only a fool who will try to conquer this world. It's only a fool who will try to conquer this world. And look back that all those kingdoms you have conquered, are they still there? By now the news has started coming that many kingdoms what he has conquered on in his way have already lost it. It's already gone. So Alexander is also becoming more thoughtful. He learned this lesson from him. That this important lesson he learned, that this whole journey and conquering the world was all a waste of time. Complete waste of time. That realization Alexander got from this jnani. So what did Alexander say? By now, some people were plotting in Alexander's army to kill him. To kill Alexander. They were plotting that. Because this always happens, isn't it? Within the, you know, how it is. Huh? This is, today it's happening, it is happening then also. Alexander's time also. So Alexander understood that the thing I am trying to do in this world, that is not the thing what I should be doing actually. He was an intelligent person. Actually, I should be realizing this truth, what the jnani has given to me. So that instruction stayed in his head. Because of that, what did he say? He stopped all his activities. And he said, when I die, you should at least do one favor for me. He said, when you take me to the funeral, you should leave my hand like this. Here is a man who had come to conquer this world, and he has left this world with nothing in his hand. So you should put my hand both in either direction, fully open, so that I can a lesson for many others to know that there is nothing to be conquered. It is Maya, that is the trick that is playing all this game with us. We have to conquer this country, we have to keep somebody else under our control. And if we don't react to this now, and all the political activities, diplomatic activities, military activities, if you look at this, it's all centered around this understanding, isn't it? Nothing more than that. Whereas if you have come to this platform, these two verses which Krishna has spoken here, all these problems are solved once for all, like that jnanis have spoken about it. So, nachainam nainam chindandi shastrani nainam dahadi pavaga. Nachainam kladayandhyapo nashoshayadi maruta. Isn't it? Nashoshayadi maruta. Achadyoyam adahyoyam kledyo shoshyamevacha nityam sarvagadasthanu achaloyam sanatana. So time and space won't affect him. So sarvagadasthanu. This sthanu is a name given to Lord Shiva. Very much. He has a name called Sthanu. Why? We've seen him in meditation process. He is like a pillar. He sits underneath the tree. He is always in meditation and he sits like a pillar. You cannot move him. So fixed in his meditations. So we talk about the pillar, isn't it? Pillar. Have you noticed sometimes children, when they play, they'll hold on to the pillar and run around. Why, young boys and little girls also, they do that while playing. This is all their enjoyment. They hold the pillar and they'll run around so that they don't fall. Because when you know running around, you will spin, head will spin, and they'll fall. So in order not to fall, they will hold on to the pillar. In the little age, they play like that. Similarly, Krishna is saying, that pillar is the soul inside. Hold on to that pillar all the time. And then do what you want in this world. It won't cause any problem. But you should be holding on to that pillar all the time. And this is exactly the game Krishna has played here in this world. Because Krishna is always in that pillar. He is the pillar himself. So nothing bothers him. So many activities Krishna carried out in this world. He was not like any other acharya or a preacher. He lived a full life in this world, a full grihastha, and or a long period of time, 125 years of life in this world. And in that 125 years, he did so many things, isn't it? Childhood pastimes in Vrindavanam, and later on in Mathura, the problem with Kamsa, fighting with Shishubala, Jarasandha and others, so many kings, so many enemies. Then after gone to Dwaraka, had a long span of householder life, married 16,108 wives, 10 children, 10 boys and a girl from each of those wives. Imagine that family, how big that family was. And plus, at the same time, he had enough prarabdham in this way, as though it's not sufficient, and goes and gets involved with the Pandavas' problem in Hastinapur, get involved with them, and then involved in the battle in Kurukshetra, organized all that battle and war and everything, got 64 million people got killed in that. And after that was over, then even then there was no peace even after that. And then he comes back. Meanwhile, he came back. Dwaraka is under attack. The Yadavas are fighting each other. So he takes them all to Prabhasam. They all get drunk and they all beat up each other and get them all killed as well. So all the Kshatriya kings were killed by the Yadavas, and the Yadavas all got killed by themselves. And eventually still he is laughing after the whole drama is over. Why? Because Sarvagata Sthanu Achaloyam Sanatana, completely fixed on the truth. So important thing to realize is that if we are fixed in spiritual life, we are fixed on the soul, platform of the soul, material life should not disturb us to that extent. It should not. Because we are not fixed there, that's why we get disturbed over everything in this world. That's why we get disturbed. So Krishna's point is that it is only to indicate to us that self-realization brings all these things in a person. Examples in the Bhagavatam, Prahlada. Prahlada's example, while coming out from the womb of Kayadhu, already realized. So therefore, Hiranyakashipu was trying to torture him in different ways, isn't it? With the spear and with the fire, with throwing him from the mountains and all kinds of things he did to Prahlada. Nothing disturbed Prahlada at any time. Why? Achaloyam Sanatana. Sarvagada Sthanu Achaloyam Sanatana. Fixed on the spiritual consciousness. Similarly, one who has known the Swarupam, one's own identity, he will never get disturbed over anything. So, Alexander pulled out the sword and tried to hit him, "I'm going to kill you," he said. What did the Jnani says to him? Jnani says to him, "It is the highest lie I have ever heard," he said, "that you are going to kill me." He said, "It is the biggest lie I have ever heard, because it is a lie. What you are telling me, because you are in ignorance, you are telling me, and this is a lie. As far as the truth is concerned, it's a lie. There's no question of killing me. You cannot do anything." Alexander paid his obeisances and left. That Swami Ramatirtha, probably you heard about him, when he went to America, and he was a highly realized soul, and a lot of people were inviting him. He went there not on his own. He had to go there due to certain circumstances it happened. There was some meeting happened in Japan, and Japanese people invited him to come. And the way he went there was with one cloth bag and his dhoti wearing. He just went there with them, nothing else in possessions. And he was so advanced in spiritual. Anyone who came into contact with him experienced that, the reality of the soul from him. He was a jnani, was a name. So from Japan, those days, it was early 1900s, this was. So from Japan, somehow, he couldn't get a passage here. And the Japanese said, you can go to America and come from through there. And for him, there is no time, no space. He was above all these things. So he says to him, what matters, America or Japan or India, it's all the same, he said. So they moved him from Japan to America, he got to America. And by the time he has become so famous that the president wanted to meet him. The president was Roosevelt at that time. Roosevelt wanted to meet him, and he arranged an appointment with Roosevelt, wanted to come and see him. He says, Rama is willing to see anybody, he says. Ramtirtha, that's how he calls himself, Rama. Says, Rama is willing to see anybody, he says. So Roosevelt comes to see him, and he introduces himself to him. Pleased to meet you, I am Emperor Rama, he says. So Emperor, he addresses himself as Emperor Rama. So Roosevelt felt very funny. Is he trying to be funny with me, with all this emperor business, he says. So Roosevelt was asking him that, where is your empire? Which I have not seen your empire, he says. Yeah, my empire is unlimited. You won't be able to find out that empire, he said. It will take a long time for you to get to this empire, he says. So like this, he teased Roosevelt and told Roosevelt that your so-called authority and position, it's finished over a 4 years, 5 years time you are elected. And after that, you are into your normal position like anyone else. But the spiritually empire, once you enter into that, Nityaha, is eternal. Sarvagada, Stanu, Ajaloyam, Sanatana. And all these qualities was in Ramatirtha. Ramatirtha had this understanding so deep, so highly intelligent and highly realized soul that nobody could say. His arguments were so powerful, if you discuss with him about anything related to Brahman or Vedantam, that he would not be able to be pulled into, you will lose the battle, you will have to surrender to his realizations. That's what always happened. So even Roosevelt left that place with that that understanding. Then his point to Roosevelt was, actually, you are possessed by your own possessions. Yeah, you are possessed by your own possessions. You see, our misunderstanding is so deep-rooted in us, isn't it? And nobody clears it up any time. It gets worse day by day. Attachment and our identity increases day by day. Remember that joke about Jawaharlal Nehru? Jawaharlal Nehru went to this mental asylum in Lahore. At that time, partition has just happened. And all the mad people were there. All the mad people were there. And Jawaharlal, they were going to release one person from inside that day. One mad person saying that he's cured now, he can go. They were saying like that to him. So Jawaharlal Nehru was very famous those days. He was very famous. And everybody wanted to be like a Jawaharlal Nehru. Everybody wanted to be like a Jawaharlal Nehru. So when Jawaharlal Nehru went to this institution, mental asylum, and when this person was going to be released, the organizers arranged in such a way, Jawaharlal Nehru wants to hand over a bouquet of flowers to him and shake hands with this person who is cured now, he says. So when he came out, he handed over the flowers to him. And that person straight away asked him, who are you? He says, Jawaharlal Nehru thought he's asking me, who am I? Jawaharlal Nehru says, I am Jawaharlal Nehru, he says. So he says, this person says, I also used to think I was Jawaharlal Nehru, but now I am cured, he says, I am going. Actually, he is right, isn't it? Because this Jawaharlal Nehru is also thinking I am Jawaharlal Nehru, which is also another ignorance, and another madness it is. If you look from the spiritual point of view, he is not Jawaharlal Nehru. He is identifying with his body and calling himself as Jawaharlal Nehru. So this madman who is cured now is saying, I am cured now. Earlier I used to think I am Jawaharlal Nehru. That disease I cured. But you will also get cured one day, he says to the real Jawaharlal Nehru. Jawaharlal Nehru could not understand what he is saying. He is still thinking, is he cured or not? That was what he was going. So how everything is so different from the spiritual point of view. Once you understand these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, our knowledge becomes clear. We have no confusion after that. Because this is the absolute thing. This is the real knowledge. The other thing is Maya's understanding. Maya's identities, Maya's creation. That's what we are carrying with us all the time, 24 hours a day. And in that world, we are doing all these transactions. Vyavaharam is happening within that sphere. So it is important that in everyday life, we should at some time find time to move out of this Maya's world and live in Krishna's world. Otherwise, continuously in the influence of Maya's world, if we live, at some point in time, we will identify only with Maya. We won't be able to identify with Krishna anymore. This is the reason why Krishna is giving to Arjuna this understanding that you, by Swarupam, your nature, you are something different than all this, what you are thinking about yourself. So, having said all that, Krishna says here that these possessions is the problem, isn't it? Parigraham. It is called parigraham. Parigraham means to hold on to something which is actually not our object of, is not our identity, or we are identifying with something like that. So like Ramchandra said to Roosevelt that you are possessed by your possessions. You are possessed by that. That's the problem. Sometimes you like, you see in the morning people go for the walk holding the dog in the hand, isn't it? The same thing. That they are thinking is my dog. But actually dog is, he is possessed by the dog. Isn't it? Dog is controlling that person. If you leave the dog, it will go on its own. No, but you won't leave the dog. You are holding on to it. So, therefore, you are controlled by the dog rather than you are controlling the dog. Dog is controlling you. The other way, you are completely under the control of the dog. So, these examples are there that to ask the question, am I holding on to the dog or dog is holding on to me? This question we have to ask. That Bhagavadam, there is this statement that parigrahaya dukhanam. There is one chapter, I think it is the 5th or 6th chapter, begins, 8th or 9th chapter begins with this, parigrahaya dukhanam. That Yadu Maharshi, when Dattatreya Maharshi, King Yadu, when he was discussing with Dattatreya Maharshi, Dattatreya Maharshi explains to King Yadu that parigraham is the problem. Parigraham means me holding on to something in this world. And he also says there that when I left everything, I am not holding on to anything, I am in my Swarupam, in my real nature. Blissful, peaceful, and always feeling eternal, eternal nature. When I hold on to something, what happens? That I immediately become a temporary in my consciousness and I get affected by the modes of nature and I lose my true identity as the soul. He explains that there. And he says, I learned this lesson from that little bird who threw away the flesh and escaped from that. That holding on to something means I am inviting materialistic danger, consciousness in me, and I'll have to suffer from that. So, this is an important point, that those who have got freedom means, from the Krishna's point of view, freedom means who have escaped from the grip of Maya. They are the real freedom fighters and they are the people who have really won the freedom. We are talking about our freedom in this world, isn't it? Every country wants to be independent and freedom fighting goes on so many years. None of this is freedom. Freedom, from Krishna's point of view, real freedom means when you have got freedom from the grip of Maya or from the ignorance what we have accumulated. So, for a jnani who has realized all this, for him, life is nothing but a game. He just plays that game like Krishna did. Achedhyoyam adahyoyam akledhyam shoshyamevacham. Therefore, he will the devotees, what they have done, they held on to Krishna. They held on to Krishna very strongly. And this tattvam is very firmly established in them. That the truth is, the reality what it is. That they are not this body. These verses, what we have now spoken, is not the symptoms of the body. It is the symptoms of the soul. That we should be careful. It is not the symptom of the body, it is the symptoms of the soul. Achedyoyam adahyoyam. That, but in order to explain that, we have given the examples through the body. That's all. Just to get an understanding of that. That's only reason. Otherwise, it should not be connected with the body under any reason, under any circumstances. That if when one starts identifying with the soul in that way, when one become more and more realized that his true nature is the soul, even the demigods and all the other controllers of the material nature start respecting him and worshipping him. That then he has to only hold on to the body till the prarabdham is over. He doesn't have to wait for anything else. And they also say, because the demigods are worshipping him. Why? You know, demigods respect those who are self-realized, because they are higher than the demigods. Demigods have got that body because of very pious activities and they have reached that state because of that. But self-realized soul is a higher state than that. So they respect the self-realized soul and offer all help to him when he has come to that state. In other words, in the self-realized state, if one is living in this world, he only has to wait for the prarabdham to finish to leave this body and go. And during that period, between the self-realized state and leaving the body, he does not experience any material discomforts. Why? Because all the Prakriti Devata, like water, fire, air, everybody looks after him without giving any trouble to him in his body. That is why self-realized soul generally don't experience any illnesses like that, like the way we experience in the material consciousness. Because he has freed himself and came to the platform of the soul, the Prakriti Devata or the material natures, deities which are controlling the material nature, they look after him to allow him to go through this remaining life to finish his prarabdham and to escape from here. He is looked after like that. To stress the importance of self. In other words, if you are self-realized, even you are saved from even material conditions, materially unhappy conditions, you are taken care of. And now, Krishna says there, they look after the body of that person without any giving any trouble to him. You will see many instances this is true, because I mentioned before about the story of Sadashiva Brahmendra. Sadashiva Brahmendra was a personality like this. Fully realized he had to live in this world. So in that realized state, whatever he has spoken and whatever he did in this world were not understood by the people here. He walking through the garden of a Nawab, Muslim Nawab, who was ruling Arcot at that time. The Muslim Nawab thought that he is an intruder into the palace. The palace had got big swimming pools and gardens and everything. People were bathing there and all. He just, without knowing, for him there no difference exists, palace or garden or town or city, no difference for him. His consciousness has gone so high. So while walking through that place, the Nawab took offense that why has he walked through without any permission, he coming through this soul. So he sends the soldiers to get him. The soldiers comes and brings him over. And they cut his hand. They cut his hand. And the hand fell off from the body. Completely separated. The whole hand was separated from the body. Sadashiva Brahmendra's story is not a very old story. This has happened 250 years ago. 300 years ago. That's all. He's all the things what he wrote. Patanjali's Yoga Sutram. He has got the Bhashyam and all that. Well-known personality. So when the hand was cut off also, he was not affected by that. It's only then this Muslim Nawab realized that this must be a great fakir, that some great personality. So he goes and pays his respects to him, and still Sadashiva Brahmendra was least affected. Neither happy nor unhappy about anything what has happened. That state of consciousness. So Nawab says, I have done this to you. He was not even aware that this has happened to his hand. The hand was gone. Imagine that state of elevated understanding, consciousness. So Nawab, feeling guilty, brings this hand and says to him that I brought this, I done this by my ignorance and all. He takes the hand and puts it back on its place and it fits in with the hand, and he walks away without saying one word from there. So imagine the consciousness that has reached by a jnani in that state is beyond our understanding even. In our material life, we make all kinds of mistakes. That is the reason why we will never be able to identify a jnani. People always ask this question, where will I find one? And even if you, it is difficult to find one because we don't know who it is, isn't it? Because the symptoms of a jnani is very difficult to understand, and it is very difficult to find one like the way we search. It is only by Krishna's arrangement you will find that person who can give that understanding. Then tatvajnanam, that means tatvajnasa we discussed before, one who is fixed up in that position, Krishna is protecting him all the time. He is always under Krishna's protection. Nityam sarvagadasthanu ajaloyam sanatana. After this, Krishna moves on to three verses, which is only telling Arjuna, Nani Shochitu Marhasi. You will notice if you look at those three verses now, we'll just recite those verses, we'll discuss it tomorrow. That is now the verse number, just a minute. Yeah, verse number 25, 26 and 27. Out of these 25, 26 and 27, we'll talk about these two verses first. 25, so far Krishna has only spoken about the soul, isn't it? Always stressing on the soul. 25 and 26 is also about the soul. What is it? Let's look at it. Verse 25. Avyaktoyama chintyoyam. Avikaryoyam uchyate tasmad evam viditvainam nanushochitum arhasi. Once again, avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate tasmad evam viditvainam nanushochitum arhasi. Next verse. Atha chainam nitya jatam nityam vamanyase mrutam tatha bitvam mahabaho nainam shochitum arhasi. Atha chainam nitya jatam nityam vamanyase mrutam tadha bitvam mahabaho nainam shochitum arhasi. Yeah. So 25, 26 and 27, Krishna ends with this word, nani shochitum arhasi, nainam shochitum arhasi, and matvam shochitum arhasi. Isn't it? He says to Arjuna, Arjuna, there is no need for any lamentation. Any lamentation, because Krishna has already spoken before that if somebody is grieving and feeling distressed, it's only coming from ignorance. Ignorance is the cause of distress. That when one is ignorant, that is not your true nature. True nature of the soul is blissful and happy and eternal. So where is the question of distress coming in there? Distress is the asat that has taken over, in other words. So in this avyaktoyam achintyoyam, that verse Krishna says there, it is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, immutable and unchangeable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. That's the first verse. And the second verse Krishna says, if however you think that the soul is perpetually born and always dies, still you have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. So these two verses are relationship with the soul. And after this, Krishna will move on to the body. That is from the verse 27 onwards. 27, 28 are all in relationship with the body. So we will discuss 25 and 26 tomorrow, and after that we'll go into 27 and 28. So I'll stop today, and all glories to Srila Prabhupada.